Hi, I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie V47, from the Ranger Command Power Hour and the Starfleet Escape Podcast. You're listening to another great Four-Eyed Radio product. For more shows, check out foureyedradio.com. It's Morphin' Time!
Ay-ay-ay-ay-ay! It's the Ranger Command Power Hour!
Today on the Power Hour, episode 223, Ranger Command Interview, Power Rangers Unlimited, The Morphin Masters, with Ryan Parrott and Rachel Wagner. Welcome to Ranger Command Power Hour on the 4-Eyed Radio Network. It's time to Ranger Up with your hosts. I'm Eric, also known as Trekkie B47. Today, I welcome both Ryan Parrott and Rachel Wagner to the podcast. Ryan is best known in Ranger Nation as a writer for Boom Studios' Go-Go Power Rangers, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, both MMPR versus TMNT miniseries, and now The Morphin Masters. His other works include Aftershock's Dead Day and Image's ongoing Rogue Sun and the upcoming The Infernals. Rachel Wagner is a writer that has worked on television shows such as Preacher, CSI New York, Physical, Revolution, Patient Zero, Saints and Sinners, and About a Boy. Additionally, she has written for Boom Studios and Image Comics, developed projects for Robert Zemeckis, Mark Forster, and Jerry Bruckheimer, and has been nominated for Saturn and AOF Fest Awards. She is no stranger to Power Rangers, having co-wrote Power Rangers issue 10 with Ryan, the short story The Price of Ambition in Go-Go Power Rangers Book 1 Deluxe Edition, and now The Morphin Masters. Welcome to Ranger Command Power Hour.
That was an awesome intro, man.
I try to knock him out of the park every time.
Why am I here? I don't know why I'm even here.
Well, speaking of Morphin Masters, that's what we're here to talk about today. We're actually releasing this episode on the release day, January 31st. So for our listeners, we're discussing the whole issue. Spoilers abound. So please make sure you read this milestone issue as soon as you can and before listening to this. So picking up right after the shocking events of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers 116, an iconic returning character, the Ranger Slayer, has entered the grid in a desperate attempt to find the Morphin Masters and the answers they might possess. That's a tall order.
It really was.
But first, I wanted to ask you, Rachel, since you're new to Ranger Command and our listeners, I always ask this question for guests who are first on the show. What was your first experience with Power Rangers?
Well, I mean, Power Rangers was on when you got home from school. So, you know, you like took the bus and then if you were lucky, you caught the opening. But usually you had to like get it when it was like halfway on or whatever. And it was just a staple of growing up. You know, it was You like knew that it was like on at 3:30 because that's, you know, like around the time that, you know, school got out. And, you know, you always wanted to be Kimberly and the guys always liked her. And so you like took up gymnastics or ballet. But yeah, I think that was my first foray into Power Rangers, an introduction, I would say.
Nice. So for the Morphin Masters, how did this idea or opportunity come about? And for you, Ryan, like how long was it after Mighty Morphin 100 that they're like, were you like, I have an idea, or you were on the call? Like, how did this come about?
I always come back. Like, I'm like Al Pacino, and I'm like, every time I'm out, they pull me back in.
Can't kill him.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, it came from actually being around Misty and Melissa, from being at all the cons with her. We do the Massiverse together, so we spent a lot of time together. And every time I would be like, so what's going on with Power Rangers? And she would sort of tell me and stuff. Because like, as Kyle has said, and it's actually true, I think for most people, is when you do leave Power Rangers after you've done a while, you don't read anything for a little while. It's sort of just like I need like a decompression zone to be able to. But like, I would just sort of hear what Melissa was doing. And I was like, oh, that's really cool. And that's really fun. Oh, the vessel, that's interesting. And like all these weird things that was sort of things that that had been talked about when I was around and now we're finally getting made. And so it was like, it sounded really good. And it like sounded really cool. And she was doing stuff that I just never had sort of the knowledge of the overall Power Ranger universe to really pull off the way that I know Misty and Melissa can. Mm-hmm. And so she told me that. And so as that was going on, I was talking to Daphne, and who's still sort of working on the book. And she's like, hey, you know, we have this slot open for a story. It was like, she reminded me, she's like, you remember the Death Ranger? She's like, how you wrote, you created the Death Ranger, but then you could never actually write the story that was the origin of the character. They're like, would you like to be the guy that actually writes one of the, and I was like, and they pitched me what was going on, and they pitched the title. They're like, oh, it's going to be Power Rangers Unlimited, the Morph Masters. I'm like, oh, I think I'm in. And so it was like, oh, that would be fun. Then I was like, but I don't know if I don't, I was busy with other stuff. I was like, I don't have the time. So I would love to bring on a co-writer who actually has worked with stuff before and has a little bit of that. Rachel had done like the 10 pager and had done some of the stuff in Power Rangers with me. So I was like, well, if Rachel can do it with me, because we were also moving at the time. So I was just like, yeah, let's do it together. And so that was where it came from. It was more of a, to be fair, it was a really kind of, they gave me kind of a broad idea of what they wanted. Yeah. So it was not me pitching them. It was more, Melissa had the story and she was like, this is the section that I think could be really cool. And then they were like, it's with Ranger Slayer. And I was like, got it.
Nice.
Yeah.
How about you, Rachel? What did you feel about Ranger Slayer and getting to write this particular story?
Oh, I mean, I love Ranger Slayer so much. Like, she's my heart. I really relate to her on so many levels that are touched upon in the book. And really, that was like why I wanted to do it. You know, the lore, I dare say, scared me because the amount of information that Boom gives you, you know, your editors give you of this is where we are thinking of the story will go and this is where it's come. It was like volumes of encyclopedias of, you know, very thick stuff that is very daunting. You know, you don't want to piss off anyone. But like for me, I approached it from like, okay, well, I love this character and let's tell what she's actually going through, you know, with this story. Not so much what this story is, but like how it affects her and what she's had to sacrifice to get here and to like really take a moment to appreciate those people who don't get a lot of respect and have had to come back from being the quote unquote bad guy and make a new name for themselves. And, you know, were the ones who never got help and have had to claw their way out of whatever they came from to get to where they are today. You know, like the little guy a little bit, or, you know, the person who, the sidekick or the bad guy, you know, just like not the main characters and, you know, what dealing with these like Power Ranger stories are like for them, because we know what it's like when the spotlight is on you. And so I really wanted to focus on, you know, what about the guys who like can't rely on anyone for help and kind of just have to do it by their own? And like, how has that affected them and changed them and created the kind of like broken person that they are, or, you know, the warrior that they are? It's made them stronger, but it's also been damaging in a number of ways too. So that really excited me about the story.
Nice. The one thing that people don't know when Rachel's explaining like the encyclopedia stuff, that when you do like a one shot, logistically, you tend, these are 40 pagers or is it 48? Maybe it's 40. I think it's 40. So you have to do them all really early. So like you don't get to read the three or four issues that lead up to that, because those aren't written yet, because you're having to break the story early. You're giving it to the artist. They're having to do it in order for it to be solicited. So you tend to write these things a little bit in a vacuum where just the idea, and when things do change, you have to adjust. There was little things that were adjusted as we went along. So that's what's so hard about it, is it's like, it's not like you're like, okay, cool, here's the everything up to that moment, and now just write your thing. It's more like, okay, so this is what could happen, and this is what we're thinking is going to happen. We haven't quite figured this part out yet, but we know this is going to happen. And then you figure out this big slot. So that's the fun part. You're like, it's a little bit of like, you know, it's a tightrope walk without a net. Yeah.
You have to like go into this like little skinny inlet of story and like, don't screw up anything that we're going to be doing, you know, in 5 years. And it's like, okay, I will try.
Yeah. Oh, well, I hope the comic keeps going for sure. But yeah, so before we get deeper into the issue and talking about like that beginning point and end point that, you know, has to kind of bridge the gap between the story, this kicks off right after issue 116 basically kills off Draken. And I haven't talked to Melissa yet about this. I'm probably going to talk to her soon, but Ryan, since you worked so hard on like Draken post Shattered Grid, what were your thoughts on his demise and like how that came to be? And yeah,
Well, it was fun because they were like, so here's this. They pitched that to me last. They were like, so here's the thing. Ranger Slayer gets into that world. She's hunting the Morphin Master. I was like, cool. I was like, how does she get there? She kills Draken. I was like, what? And I was like, oh, okay. I go, is he dead? She's like, well, you know, it's Power Rangers. But like, to be fair, I don't really know. You know, who knows? I mean, how many... I thought Jason was dead in this coin, this universe, but I was dead wrong about that. So. But I was happy. I remember when they kind of pitched the idea of what, how that would go. I liked that it was like this sort of bittersweet moment, but sort of like he wasn't entirely redeemed and he wasn't entirely evil. It was sort of this weird gray area. And I thought that's a nice way to sort of play that character, I think, because of the way that we'd come. Because I know when I wrote him, I never wanted him to be redeemed. I always liked the idea that he would work for his own self-interest, but he wasn't somebody who was like going to become a good Draken is just Tommy. So like, right, there's no point, right? Like, it's just like, we got two of them now. So there's no point. So I felt like you could always flirt with the idea of that with that. But I liked the way that they executed it. I thought was like, it rode that same thing, kind of rode that line right down the middle.
It was funny because, you know, when I saw her take the coin and it's kind of like, hey, this is the white light, you know, pure of light and all that stuff, I was almost like, are we going to get like another Ranger Slayer form? I was kind of like, but that's not this story.
Oh,
for another story.
What I like about this story is that it is able to essentially become almost like a buddy cop type of story.
Yeah.
So where did the pink emissary idea come from?
What are you pointing at, Ryan?
I was pointing at you. They can't see that.
I'm so not like below
it,
you.
Ruin it. Oh, you are on my screen. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Zoom and your funny little color.
Sorry.
So that was one of the fun parts about the story was they were like, okay, Ranger Slayer is going to be in the grid, but you can do whatever you want. And it was when we discovered it was going to be a two-hander, which was with Ranger Slayer and the Pink Emissary. That's when the story came together. That's when we figured out the whole drive of it. That's when it got really fun because the hard part about having anybody sort of go on a Wizard of Oz like adventure is like, who are they talking to and how are those in relate and what's the relationship and how does that relationship evolve over the story? And I think it was when we figured out sort of what Rachel was alluding to earlier, this idea of like, the Ranger Slayer comes into this world and for the first time gets to meet the Pink Emissary, the one that had in the reality is like, oh, finally, I get to meet it. It's sort of a weird story about kind of meeting God, like that the whole story is kind of about that. Your first one is it's meeting the one that was supposed to be your guardian angel, the one that was supposed to help you out and just never showed up and you getting to call them on all that bullshit. And then also meeting God and being angry and then discovering there's a whole nother thing. So that was when we figured out that it was going to be a story about someone saying, why me? Why did I have to? Why did I suffer? And the Pink Emissary sort of saying, you suffered so that you could be like, it's a little like the why do we fall, Bruce, right? I let you fall so you could pick yourself back up again. And I remember when we figured that out, which I think was like what you kept playing with that relationship. And Rachel, like chime into that. Like it was figuring out that relationship that I felt really guided the whole story because like all the cool landscapes are cool. But that relationship to me is the heart of the whole story.
For sure. I always loved how their voices are so diametrically opposed. I mean, like it's the buddy cop thing, what you're talking about. We were doing almost like the first season of True Detective, dare I say, where it's like, you have like the true believer who's like, this is how things go. And then you have the one who is like, shut up. What are you talking about? You know? So like, I loved bringing both of those voices in of like, yeah, really just going through the adventure with people who, you know, like a true believer and a person who doesn't have any faith at all. And, you know, like really having those great conversations that come out of two people like that talking. And it opened up such possibilities of what we could talk about, like how that affects our character and how that affects our world and what the cost is of, you know, putting all of your eggs in a basket and being like, this is what I believe. This is what we're going to do. Like, follow me because I know the way. And then the other person to be like, but how do you know for sure? You know, like there's no guiding light. There's not been a guiding light in my life. How are you so sure about this stuff? So I just loved how... And the comedy came out of that, too. Like, I hope the comedy came out of that. You know? of, you know, one being, you know, the straight man and one being like, you're full of crap, basically.
I did enjoy the Blackpink reference. That was very funny. I did.
Oh,
I like
Ryan.
That one.
Ryan had to actually fight to keep that in.
I did.
Oh, really?
I did. Yes.
They wanted to take it out and Ryan put his foot down. Ryan doesn't put his foot down all the time. He like picks and chooses his battles. But on that one, he was like, this is a good line.
Yeah. I was like, someone's going to like that line. I know it's a little bit obscure, but it's a funny. Yeah. Like, I'm glad that was kept in there. Thanks.
Yeah.
Well, you guys talked about earlier getting all of this lore and what they wanted to connect. A lot of the lore surrounding the Morphin Masters and the origin of the emissaries, a lot of that was kind of distilled in the Power Rangers Universe miniseries. So how much inspiration or parts of the story did you draw from that? I know, obviously, the Pink Morphin Master is Alea, and then you had, they fought Telozi and Zev, the corrupted green and black brothers who were those emissaries. So, and Ryan, I know you wrote the Blue Emissary, you know, extensively during the Power Rangers run. So where did that inspiration come from? And Ryan, for the Blue Emissary specifically, did you have to change their personality aside from being evil or write them differently since Universe came out?
Yeah, I mean, I originally, you know, this one, I don't want to get into trouble, so I'll be good. But look, originally there was just the three emissaries. Like, it's really interesting because I remember when Kyle and I were when we came up with the emissaries, and it was mostly, I mean, I guess I can say this, I've been out of the, they're not coming for me. It's like, we came up with the emissaries because at the time, Saban didn't, we weren't really allowed to touch the Morphin Masters, but we wanted, it was the issue of, I think it was Mighty Morphin. It might have been the free comic book day issue where Zordon goes and meets the emissaries. And we're like, we need him to meet with someone. And so we needed sort of an in-between. And so we created that character. And the idea was that it was red, yellow, and blue. And those are the three primary colors. And from those colors, all other colors came. So the idea was that these three were sort of the voice of the Morphin Masters. And it was a way to protect ourselves, but also give us the flexibility to be able to do different things. And then obviously the Blue Emissary was part of them, the Omega Rangers. And then after I left, then Universe was kind of done with another writer. And that whole mythology of where the Morphin Masters came from, where the emissaries came from and all that stuff, that came in after the fact. So I've sort of had to weave in. It was like, oh, okay. I felt a little like, you know, when JJ had made the first one and then Rian Johnson made The Last Jedi. And you're like, that's not what I was going to do. But it's totally cool. It ended up working out to my advantage. It was kind of fun. Like, we handed the baton off to someone else and that person took that baton and ran with it and told a great story. And it's fun to sort of like piece it all together and figure it out. And it was weird to come full circle and then ultimately be the one doing the Morphin Master and taking the baton from Universe. And hopefully it all weaves together. You know, I'm sure there's people out there who don't think it weaves together, but that's okay. Like, we were having fun with it. And the nice thing about the corruption or like the that was going on, that kind of, because that was going on through the series and stuff, that allowed us to play with the voices in ways that I think kind of protected us a little bit. Like the Blue Emissary, if you go back and read my first stuff on Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, like the Blue Emissary talks like Doctor Who. Like, he's a creepy person, right? But he got a little more, he'd gone off and seen the world and got a little bit less Yoda and became a little more tangible and stuff. But I will say, it was really fun to write that scene with, are we going to go through the book? So should I not jump forward?
No, you can jump anywhere you want.
Yeah. Well, with the Billy and the Blue Emissary pretending, like, that was, I remember when we came up with that, I was like, oh, cool. I get to write the Blue Emissary again. I get to play that character and sort of kill him or not kill him or however, you know, what, it's the grid. Who knows? but it was fun to be able to bring that character back home. And I actually really ultimately liked using a lot of stuff from the Universe because it gives you this whole, it's really dense. And honestly, if you put a gun in my head right now and you're like, name all of the emissary characters' names, I'd be like, I'm not going to get those right. I'm not.
Well, I think that's kind of cool that it was focused on pink, green, and black, because we had already seen a lot of red, yellow, and blue. So this was a great way to bring those in too.
Yeah, that was the idea. It was like, who hasn't really been shown, who hasn't really been utilized, and let's see, you know, if this is the end, it's, you know, at darkest hour, who knows? Like, it felt like this was like, let's make sure we get a little bit of everybody. So, yeah.
Going back to, like, the Billy and Blue Emissary deception, how much was he lying about, you know, the Illumination being the wisest of the Morph Masters? Is the Illumination even a thing? Is that just kind of like he's on the crazy town, or what's happening there?
I mean, the real fun part of being somebody who ran Power Rangers for so long is I got to make up whatever I wanted. And no one argued with me. But now I don't get to do that. I think, if you're just asking me, I think the Illumination is real. I think that because we have basically said that the grid is filled with people and there's a entire civilization there, but we have the Morphin Masters. My thought process was that there is the Morphin Masters, and then there is the ones that we talk about, the Illumination, which is the leaders of them. And so that was the way. I just wanted to give them a name, and it felt like it connected with what we were going for. Because it was like I'd always sort of assumed that it's like, oh, well, like, how many Morphin Masters are there? If we're saying there's a whole civilization, why haven't we ever really seen them? Where'd they always go? And it just felt like there's a group of people. We need to give that group a name. So it could also be, he also could be lying about everything. So who knows?
I like that we don't know. That's the fun of him, you know, being a manipulative son of a bitch. It's like, you know, we don't know which way he goes. It could be, I don't think, I mean, like, yeah, when you write it, Ryan, of course, you have to write it with an idea in mind. As a writer, that's what you have to do. You can't just be like, oh, I don't know. At least that's how I operate. Like, it's once the reader reads it, it becomes something else. It becomes theirs. But when you write it, you have to have an idea. You have to, you know, have a North Star. And so, yeah, I think that's how it translates here. Like, just because Ryan has, you know, his map in his head doesn't necessarily mean that's what it actually is.
If we'd been really smart, we would have got together before this call and you would have said the exact opposite of what I said. The Illumination isn't real. It's entirely made up. Yeah.
Super made
Even
up.
Even the writers can't agree.
Oh my God. You have no idea how many talks we had about all of this stuff.
Yeah,
you know, like, it's so many long conversations and so many people on the email and throwing their two cents in. So yeah, it was... It was a very long process to get to a place where we all could agree on the lore of Power Rangers, you know?
Yeah. You only got 40 pages to answer a question that has been sitting around for 30 years. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's a big task. And I'm always curious, like, from the planning stages to, you know, when it comes out, like, when did you guys actually start talking about this? Like, is it like months, a year? Is it been kind of a while? I'm always curious about, like, the timeline of these things.
It was months. What were you going to say, Ryan?
Yeah, I'm going to actually see where the first email is. Hold on one second. Yeah. Let me look this up.
It's definitely months.
It was in August.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I think it was August. So we started working on it a while ago. Yeah.
That's awesome.
So if you think about that, think about what books were out in August. Right. And that tells you how far back we were trying to figure out what was going on. Yeah.
I love the art in this issue. I think Daniel Bayless, like, knocked it out of the park. Did you have a choice in artists, or was kind of just already assigned? And how was it like working with Daniel on this issue?
I think Daniel was already on it or had already started. And I'd worked with Daniel before, I believe, on... I've worked with so many artists, but, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure, because I know I've seen Dan's work before in Power Rangers with other books before. So, yeah, he was already there. And I actually thought, like, when they had him, I was like, that's amazing, because the thing that we really, really wanted the story to be about was we wanted to make sure that the locations were all as okay. There are certain artists, none of the ones I've worked with, all the ones I've worked with are geniuses in their own right. But there are some artists out there who really don't like to draw backgrounds. And this one, we knew that if we're going into the grid, the backgrounds and the locations and stuff had to be a character into themselves. And I thought Daniel absolutely knocked some of these out of the park and really spent the time and really wove he used his style to sort of really fly the world. And you can see the progression. Like, we wanted each little section in the thing to be their own little lands in a way, a different colors. We can talk about that later. Like, we actually have color schemes that we dictated each land to be. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we can tell you real quick. I didn't mean to jump off.
No, go for it.
The first part, when they first arrive, that is red and orange. And so the forest is red and orange. And then when they get to the city, the thing, we wanted that to be blue and green, I think was what we were going for, right?
Yeah.
And then when they get to sort of the comet and thing, that was going to be indigo purple. And violet, and the purple and violet. And so the idea was they were moving through the rainbow all the way to black and meeting with the things. And so that was dictated very specifically. And I thought Daniel did a great job on that.
All the way to when you get to, you know, the Morphin Masters in the center, then it's very bare bones. You know, we took out all the color and it was like black and white and not much in the room. And so that's what it was about. It was just like an explosion of color and objects coming at you as you get closer and closer into the center. And then when you get to the center, it's just like blank, you know. It was, we took inspiration a little from Neverending Story.
Oh, okay.
You know, when you finally get to the princess, what is her name?
The childlike empress.
Yes. Child, thank you. Childlike empress. Thank you. When you finally get to her, you know, and it's just a white room of nothing. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, and that's also because the nothing has taken everything away. But I still loved that idea of, you know, when you get to the heart of the matter or the most important people, there's nothing. It's just like white light. It's like they don't need anything. They don't use color. It's like, you know, everything is like going on inside their brains.
And I love that because like in the beginning, the first part when Kim's kind of recounting everything, the background is all black. And then at the end, it ends the same way it begins. And just overall, that's the theme. Like Kim at the end of this book, like grew a little and has more knowledge, but she's basically at square one. Like the Morphin Masters didn't help at all.
Right.
Nope. Yeah. And I think that was an intention from the very beginning. That was actually dictated by Melissa. She was like, we want to present the idea that the Morphin Masters are the saviors. We're going to go find the saviors and everything. They are the giant MacGuffin or the Deus Ex Machina. Yeah. Let's go find God and he'll fix everything. And then you get there and they're like, not helpful at all. But what we liked was the journey was, it was a little, it's the Wizard of Oz. You get all the way to the wizard. The wizard's going to solve everything. And the wizard's crazy. And the idea is that, thankfully, that Ranger Slayer had the Pink Emissary and the two of them went on this journey together where she realized that they actually can do this themselves. And like they're all the experiences, all the horrible things that Ranger Slayer has seen and done and had to deal with has been leading to this moment of going, you are ready. And there's the thing with the Pink Emissary. She's like, I have faith in you. Like, I know you. I've seen you. I know you can do this. And I don't think up until that point, Ranger Slayer thought she could. And so now she comes out of this going, okay, they're not going to save the day. We're going to save ourselves. And I thought that's a better, I think that's a cooler ending than if she had come running in to save the day. You know, it's not like she's gone to another dimension and grabbed the Solar Rangers and brought them in to save the day at any point. So, you know, that worked out perfectly. All right, I did that in a previous book and we're not doing that.
But I do disagree that like she didn't change throughout this journey. Like I think that she, when we first meet her, she's used to doing things on her own and no one coming in and help her. And she's very bitter about that. And then by the end, you know, she's thankful that that happened to her. And so she's like, she's at a better place of acceptance of the fact that she's had to pull herself up by her bootstraps and get to this place because she's ready to, you know, save the world now. And so like, I think meeting these Morphin Masters and seeing that the Emperor has no clothes affected her in a positive way of now she's like at peace with the fact that no one looks out for her because it's okay. She's got this, you know?
And I think for me as a reader, you know, having followed this whole series since the beginning and, you know, Ryan, you creating Ranger Slayer in Go-Go Power Rangers, and just to see how many different writers have now tackled her and all the adventures that she's been in, Beyond the Grid and, gosh, her own miniseries, Draken New Dawn, and the journey of the entire character. And I really felt like this was the culmination of all of that. And she's right. Like she's been constantly like down in the dirt, like fighting for like every single moment to get ahead. And I don't know, someone who's been, you know, in the, you know, we've all been in the pandemic and it sometimes it seems like it's really hopeless, but I thought it was a very strong message to be like, no, you actually have the power within yourself and you've already done these amazing things. And even though you still don't believe it, you can do it. And it's really empowering to have someone actually say that to you and acknowledge that, no, you're pretty badass. You can actually do this. And just that entire story was like, that's such a great message for, you know, what kind of everyone is going through right now.
Yeah, totally. I've always thought like, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger unless it makes you bitter and then mm-hmm. you won't grow, you know? And so the only way you're going to grow is if you actually become thankful for those things that have happened and realize that they made you stronger. But like, you have to get out of being bitter and holding what has happened against you or against the world, because you're not going to grow from that. And you're not going to be able to help people from that. And yeah. That's my little two cents about that.
Did you guys have like a really funny line that you are glad or just a special moment in this that you're really proud that either remained untouched or just like something that you had envisioned from the beginning and it stayed until the end? Like a favorite moment or favorite line or just something that kind of went untouched and you're like, I'm so glad this made it into the book.
My favorite is actually Rachel's line about the sequined hat machine that she had. I was like, because it was awesome. That's the fun part about writing with like an actual woman, like who's writing a female character. Like there was a specificity to that conversation that I was like, that's awesome. I don't even know what that is, but that's a wonderful, that feels like a real thing. And I love that. I love that she's like, I made this hat and no one cared. And it felt very real and sort of very sort of like something that I could never write. And I thought that was great. Me, there was the moment that I was sort of super excited about. It was ever since. So the thing that when we first created Ranger Slayer, I remember we were like, oh, Ranger Slayer. I was like, oh, she should have a bow of darkness and she'll have the two swords put together to make the bow. And I've been really proud of that because it was in my brain. And then I've seen cosplay people make it. But I always had this idea of, oh, at some point we got to break that thing and then we can do a battle with two swords. And so it was finally why I realized, oh, when we have the pink emissary go crazy, like get turned and go crazy, we can literally have a lightsaber battle with the pink emissary and the Ranger Slayer using the bow of darkness. And so when we were able to put that in for them to break it and then sort of use it together, there's like a really nice Daniel did a great shot of the two of them sort of like.
Yeah. Like they're in the pose. Yeah. And it was really cool. Really
you gotta
cool.
do poses in Power Rangers, man. Oh, yeah. It's all like, you know, they talk in pose. So you gotta do all that. So I was happy they did that. And then there was another one where they kind of clash swords and come at each other. And I remember that those are things that I was really happy with because I was like, oh, I finally got to do that thing that I'd always imagined.
Mine was when Kimberly is talking to who she thinks is Billy in the water, Coinless Billy. And he's looking at her and seeing, you know, that she changed her hair and he can see that she's like changed a lot more than her hair from the last time, you know, we saw her and he's like, I'm sorry, I wasn't there for you when you needed me. And then her response of that was supposed to be my line. Like I really loved that little turn of those two. And then the other line of when she's complaining to the emissary and she says, it's just, it always seems that they have everything to lose yet never lose a thing while I have nothing left to lose yet still lose everything. That just like, I have felt that so many times. And I was glad that I could, you know, have her say that. And I feel like a lot of people feel that way too, that like, I literally have nothing left to lose, but still the world found something to take from me. While these other people who, you know, seem to be just doing fine, you know, like, you know, the Power Rangers are still not affected, are still like, they don't have any scrapes to speak of. They like, you know, they don't die, you know, like she's speaking from like Draken just died, you know, like when we're not good enough, people like me die. But like when the others are not good enough, something still happens that, you know, saves the day for them. And so I feel like that on a number of occasions.
And then going back to the art, did you guys help Daniel with kind of like the visualization of it, or did you just let him go free reign, or was there like certain locations that you had kind of described in your writing in the script?
Oh, we were very specific. Not that he didn't take them and run with them and make them better than I could imagine. We really spent a lot of time because we like I said before, like because we talked about the grid for so long and made it a thing. It's like we needed to make sure that if this was going to be Oz, that it needed to have like real scope and scale. And let's try and show things we've never seen before. And because we've made so many promises about, you know, like when we created like Safe Haven and we sort of suggested that this is where a lot of them came from and that they'd gone through the master arch and gone through. And it was like, we needed to make sure that we saw pieces of that. And so we tried to weave in, like we wove Z in at the beginning and then we wove in. Actually, that was one of my lines I really liked. So, like the line, which was like, "Is he a tree becoming a robot, or a robot becoming a tree?" Or like, "Yes," and I was like, "I like that." I really liked writing Crazy Z for some reason. That was really fun.
And it really like took what we a lot of times we would give him like the essence or an idea of what we were thinking, and then he would run with it and make it even better than we thought it was going to be. But sometimes we would just say like, "This is the inspiration of what we're thinking here. But if you have something to add, please do." And he did. You know, like I love the robot tree. That was so beautiful. And coming up into the city with the water was just like an awe-inspiring moment that like we didn't know exactly what that was going to look like. We just told him the feeling that we wanted and he was like, "I got it."
Yeah.
And I don't think I have ever asked you, Ryan, even though you've worked on Emissary stuff for so long, and I'm curious, is the changes that the whatever pairings that is that left to the artist to do whatever, or do you have specific instances like I want pink ninja steel with, you know, whoever?
Usually I leave that to the artist because it feels like that's the fun part for them. Like I don't want to, micromanage them already and it's just like, let's not overdo it. However, if for instance, I think when in the battle between the black and the green emissary and in the pink emissary battle, I think we did dictate what weapons were used and forms needed to be. So because the dialogue needed to. So those ones I think we dictated. I remember going through and finding those and man, that was a fun, like what are the best weapons? Like that was a fun day.
It was really cool. When they're calling out the different weapons and, you know, doing the calls. Yeah. That was a lot of fun to read and look at. So a lot of this dealing with the Ranger Slayer and how she's feeling and never getting that break, so much of her character is like she can never find peace. In your minds, what would peace finally look like for the Ranger Slayer?
I mean, I don't know if we hit it or not, but that's what I was trying to do with the end of this little story is that she's first so angry with her position in life and her path, I guess, that like kind of was like chosen for her a number of times. You know, she didn't really even have a say in a number of things that happened to her. And by the end of the story, I wanted her to be at peace with that. I wanted her to be grateful for that journey and for how strong it has made her and the realization that like, if she hadn't been through what she had been through, then she wouldn't be strong enough to defeat the emissary, spoiler, at the end. So that's what my idea for peace for her was just getting to this place where it's not even that she's not bitter. She's actually like happy that this was her journey. She's like thankful for her journey. And yeah, I mean, you know, she's not, you know, a completely different character or anything. She's just at a place now where what I was talking about before, where you know, she's let the bitterness go. So now she can actually grow from it, you know, because I felt like she was at a place where she wasn't going to grow anymore if she couldn't get over this. And so I wanted her to get to a place where she's over it. And now she can start to make herself better if she wants or figure out, you know, what her journey is from here on out if she wants. But now she's at a place where she's no longer angry about it. So she's at a place where she can think about it and accept things and move forward.
Yeah, I think she should emotional peace. Absolutely. I think physical peace. She should go back to the Coinless Universe and reopen the juice bar. That should be what that would be. That's what that's
it. Yes, I take back my answer. That's what my answer is.
Just because like she's had the coin, like everybody else lost their coins. And she was like, "I've had this the longest." And it'd be nicer. I think she'd be like, "Can someone just take this so I can just chill out?"
I think so, yeah. Can I just chill out, maybe? Can I just like write in journals and like think about, you know, myself a little bit? That's great.
Yeah, the big knitter, yeah.
I'm going to go catch up on some Sopranos. I haven't seen that yet, you know? Do it.
Ryan, when you did send me this issue and we were kind of talking about it, he's like, yeah, let me know what you think, because it gets a little weird towards the end. I think having these crazy Morphin Masters was, and, you know, even Pink's line, like, they're so lost with, you know, all the power, and it's turned them just kind of weird and crazy. I legitimately laughed out loud when he's got the coins, like, the soft, creamy center. I'm like, wait, what the hell is going on? I legit laughed out loud. I was like, it was so ridiculous and unexpected.
That's all Rachel. That was, I'll be honest.
I'm so glad. Yeah, Ryan, go ahead, be honest.
It was true. It was all right. So we were talking about how we get to the Morphin, and she was like, what if, and she pitched the coin and she picked the food. And I was like, okay, that, I mean, that's a pretty good placeholder. We'll do that. We'll keep talking about that. And then when we got, I was like, I can't come up with any better. This is great. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, Ryan was just convinced that it wasn't going to get approved. It was okay, lady, you're being very funny, but let's get back to the reality of Power Rangers here. And so, like, hats off to them for approving this, too. Like, you know, everybody, it's Bond and everything, because I know how important and special and sacred all of these characters are. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that we can play in the sandbox and change things that we want to, or create, you know, new unexpected things, doesn't always go over so well. And so, like, I'm very appreciative that they were so open to, like, let's take this in a weird direction. And so weird. Like, why not? Let's go weird and funny. So yeah, I'm glad that you liked it, because, you know, not everyone, it might not be everyone's cup of tea. Yeah.
It was just like, because everything's like so serious and battle after battle, and it just takes away the soft, creamy center. And the way Daniel drew that expression, I just, it was great. That was great. Like,
yeah. I love Ranger Slayer immediately after that. And she was like, what the hell is going on?
Like, oh God. But yeah, Daniel had actually put him like a little more in the background when he did that with his face. He still had like the great face, but it wasn't, yeah. He wasn't front and center. And like, one of my notes was like, move him. I want to see him doing this in all of his ridiculous glory of just like biting down on this, like make this the centerpiece. So yeah, I'm glad that came across.
When you were done crafting this book and, you know, getting the pencils in and all that stuff, was there any talk of where would you guys like to see the Ranger Slayer go from here? Like, any notes for Melissa, like, to add back to her event?
Well, we already said she's going to open up the juice stand.
Oh, right? Oh yeah.
That's what I want from her. I want her to finally watch Sopranos, because she has, everyone keeps talking about how great it is.
Dear Melissa, I know this might sound crazy for a finale for Darkest Hour, but bear with me. Yeah.
Sopranos watch party.
There we go. Yeah.
We just want her to kind of like be retired and like, well, what are all the things that I've always wanted to do? I'm going to make cards. Okay, I'll stop talking. Go ahead.
No, Melissa has it planned out. Like, she knows her ending and she knows what she wants to do. When she read it, she was very complimentary and was really excited. And she's always fun to work with. She's just collaborative in the best possible way. So, if she wanted us to be like, I think she had already had it already planned out. So we were just like, this is kind of where the ending is. Like, once again, handing off the baton, it was more of a, okay, you know, we got you where you wanted and stuff. But to be fair, like, I remember there's been times when I was doing whatever event I did that I can't remember at the moment. It wasn't necessarily Evil. It wasn't Absolute Power. Doesn't matter. Whatever the last
Altarian
was.
War?
Yeah, maybe. There was a thing I remember, the Death Ranger, when I did the Death Ranger series, like, I remember when I read the Death Ranger issue, there was things that changed because of, specifically because of that story. And so, like, I can imagine there's probably little things that after Melissa read this, she was like, oh, hopefully. I'm just patting myself on the back, assuming that our genius came through.
I think that's about it for this. Was there anything else you guys wanted to get off your chest about this issue now that it's finally out in the world?
Just, it was so much fun to do. It was hard, like, it took a little while to figure things out. And just like because it was 40 pagers. It's funny. 10 pagers are hard and 40 pagers are hard. Because 20 is the sweet spot. But like a 10 is hard because you just never have enough room. 40 is you almost have just enough room to screw it up. Like you always get there and you're like, God, if we just had four more pages, it would all work out, right? But I was really happy with the way this came through. I think the opportunity to get to write Ranger Slayer again, mm-hmm. and not necessarily end her story, because, you know, there's obviously could be other things that she could do and stuff like that. Yeah. But to be able to see her, I think what Rachel said, find sort of an emotional peace after all this, to rail against fate and then look at it and see it as a blessing, I think is a really cool way. It was something that I never imagined that character. Like, I didn't have an ending in mind, but this is as good an ending for that character in my mind. And I never got that opportunity to do that. So like being able to come back and do that was like a really great thing. So thanks to everybody at Boom and for Melissa for letting us do this, and for Allison and Daphne for picking us. That part was pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's what I was going to say too. Like it was a lot of work, but so much fun. And I'm just so grateful that everyone was supportive of like our wacky, weird ideas that we wanted to do and the directions that we wanted to take this in. Mm-hmm. And it is such a great collaboration. And all of the editors, Allison and Melissa, they all have such really good things to say and add that always came from a place of wanting to make the story better and helping us. You know, it wasn't like, no, I hate that. Let's go in a completely different direction. It was always from a place of like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing there. And what if we add this too? And it was like, yes, that's great too. So the whole process was a lot. It was a lot of emails. I think some of my, you know, email chains were like 67 emails long. Some of them. So
you guys did have a few debates about what the color background of a panel should be.
Ryan, I could see Ryan rolling his eyes, and because I would have like really strong opinions about the color of a page, and like no one's gonna understand if it's not blue. And I could hear Ryan be like, "What are you talking about? You know, pick the hill that you're gonna die on." But yeah, that's just being a writer most of the time. You try to figure out what is worth fighting for and what just you should let go. And because this whole process is very collaborative, and it was fun.
Rachel, I wanted to ask you, speaking of Ryan saying like 10 pages are hard and 40 pages are hard, you actually had a really cool story, The Price of Ambition, in GoGo Power Rangers, the Book One Deluxe Edition. Like, I really enjoyed seeing Rita's past and basically the origin of the jewel in her wand. Yeah. And I just wanted to say that was just such a great read. And, you know, I told Ryan this when we were talking, you know, Mighty Morphin and Power Rangers, issue 10 of Power Rangers with Yale, and just having that Yale focus story was just, it was so fun and it was unique. And basically, like, thank you for writing those stories. Like, they were really fun.
You know, when the Price of Ambition, when Daphne pitched that to me, she didn't pitch it to me. It was more, you know, she gave me the parameters of this story. It wasn't necessarily going to be about Rita. She was like, you can pick amongst any of these characters. Mm. We want to just go into depth about a character that we haven't seen, you know, this part or this side of them. And so she gave me a number of characters to choose from. And I picked option C, which was like, can we actually do a Rita story? And she was like, okay. And I was like, I really want to see Rita as like a Power Ranger, as like a teen, you know, like what was like her journey with that? And what was she like? And where did she, you know, I'm so big on arcs. Where did she start at the beginning of this story? And then how did she like really become or start to become the person that she is by the end of the story? Mm-hmm. So that was really fun. And I really, just as a fan, I hope they do more Rita stories of that, because there's, in my opinion, there's so many more stories to tell where she is young and working under her father and trying to prove herself to him and, you know, missing her mother and how that has shaped and affected the person that she became. And I also would love to see Inu come out at some point, right, and, you know, have a little conversation about how he has, because, you know, he was like the one part of like good that she still had in her that, you know, like died or not died, but she had to like keep it away. Mm-hmm. But in my mind, like, he's watched everything that she has done and not even watched what she's done. She has made him culpable. She's made him responsible for so many of her actions. Like, it came from, you know, her staff. And so I would love to see him come out and be like, wow, I've got things to say about what you have done to the world, you know? So, yeah.
And I just thought it was cool because it was in a Go-Go Power Rangers. Like, the last bit was like the name, like the whole yearbook thing.
Yes. Yeah,
that was really cool.
Yeah. I think that came from Daphne, if I remember correctly. But yeah, that was, she was like, can we do something like this? And I was like, yes, that's so good. And then I just ran with it. But yeah, again, collaboration, so good.
It was awesome because I remember they gave us the big hardcovers and I looked on it and it was so cool to have Rachel's name underneath mine. And I was so excited because I just got to read the story as a fan. I was like, I got to go to the end and read it. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And it's really funny if you watch, if you read that one and the, what's the 10 pager you did of the, oh God, why am I blanking on the name? Phantom Ranger story they did with Putty Rita and all that stuff. Like,
oh yeah,
there's a really interesting, like, if you read those two stories together, there's some really interesting sort of thematic weaving that's really kind of fun. And right.
Even though it's Putty Rita.
But it's right. Still her, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. She's still got, you know, everything in her brain that Rita has.
Yeah, so yeah, those things are fun.
Very cool. Well, I want to thank you guys so much for being on the show. For our listeners, at the time of this episode's release, Power Rangers Unlimited, The Morphin Masters, is out now. So obviously go to your comic shop, do all that. But I want to give you guys the opportunity. Are there any upcoming conventions you want to talk about or any projects that you would like to promote coming up?
No conventions right now. Taking a little bit of a break to just catch up on everything. I might do C2E2 in April, but other than that, I don't know. I'm trying.
I'll be there.
Only for you, my friend. Only for you. But I am trying to figure out a way to go to C2E2. And Rogue Sun 18 is out, and Volume 3 should be coming out soon. And I believe The Infernals is going to be out in February from Noah Gardner and I, which is about the Antichrist. It's very Power Ranger related. Although Jonathan Entwistle liked it and read it and thought it was very cool. So
I saw that. So
insane. He's a Power Ranger guy, you know. Yeah, it's about the Antichrist and who's about to die and has to leave the apocalypse to one of his three children. So, you know, family friendly. It's not at all. But those are the ones that I've got coming up. Yeah.
I don't really have anything. I'm fairly new to the comic world in general. Like, I come more from TV. And so, like, this whole idea that people actually, you know your name and your like name is on books and like, you know, Ryan, like, you know, signs autographs is so foreign to me because, you know, like on TV shows, you know, like you you write an episode or you're working within a room of like, you know, 12 people, but like no one knows who you are. Like they might know the showrunner, but like no one really knows like, oh my God, you wrote episode 4.9. That's amazing. Like, there's no credit given. So like, yeah, that's just my long-winded way of saying any convention that will have me, I will happily go to.
And Rachel, since you have been dipping your toes into comics, is that something that you want to keep pursuing?
Yeah, for sure. I did a backup comic in Rogue Sun called Gray Girl that I'm continuing to explore. But that, I don't know how much to talk about. That is, it's like, okay, the sentence pitch is like, it's the action version of 13 going on 30. So it's a little girl trapped in a older woman's body and she has to kick ass about it. But she also is a victim of Dorian Gray. And so in our world, Dorian doesn't, you know, suck life from a picture. He sucks life from little girls. And it's a thinly veiled meditation on child trafficking, which is not so fun to talk about, but this is like really fun to do as 13 going on 30 action revenge piece.
I love that we pitched child trafficking and Antichrist stories on the Ranger Danger, I mean the Power Hour. Sure. This is the audience, guys. This is what we're aiming for.
Yeah,
this has been a lot of fun. So I really thank you both for taking the time to do this. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. It was.
Thank you. This was so much fun for me too. I've watched Ryan do a million of these. And so it was fun to be invited along for the ride. And so thank you for this.
You're absolutely
and
welcome.
I hope that I was able to, and Ryan, we were able to answer your questions and give a little insight, like a peek behind the curtain of the creative process which is, you know, so cool. Cause when I was in school, there was none of that going on. And so like, the fact that we're a part of it is just like, ooh, mind blown.
It's the stuff for comics I really like, because even in movies, like I always love like the behind the scenes, you know, the prop makers making the props, all that stuff. And so anytime I can talk to a writer or an artist and it's like, but how do you do this? It's great. And I know our listeners really appreciate it, too. So really, thank you both for being on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Ranger Command Power Hour, only on the Four-Eyed Radio Network. You can catch a new episode every other Saturday. Find us on the Morphin Grid at www.rangercommand.com. Follow us on Twitter at RangerCommandPH. Like us on Facebook and Instagram at Ranger Command Power Hour. Ranger Command is also on Patreon. Become a patron by pledging as much or as little as you like every month and receive cool perks. By pledging, you are helping us make our show even better. Go to patreon.com/rangercommandph to learn more. Thanks for listening.